Good morning. Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting us both. This is my first Codex, so it's a thrill to be here and see in person what all the excitement has been about these last few years. I want to talk about, yes, the wood engravings, because that's the part that I find most challenging, most exciting. It's what I've sort of specialized in over the years since I first got my hands on one. And also about the collaboration in this book, because it really has been a miracle of collaboration as far as I'm concerned. I have been doing a dance of collaboration with this lovely man for almost 40 years in our marriage, of course, and in our working life. And so with this book, I have three dancing partners. I have Crispin, I have Simon Brett, and I have Shakespeare. It doesn't get any better than that. I mean, I couldn't imagine repeating this experience. No, you didn't, Crispin, actually mention the phrase that you and Simon came up with how you saw this play coming alive on the page, and basically the phrase they said was, "We want to stage the play on the page." So they would come to me with. I mean, I had some part in the design of it and collaborating on what we do here. But essentially, I was handed this stuff to deal with. So I would get the type set by Crispin and the block, a design. You saw the page designs set up. And, I was to bring it to life here, print it. And it was a thrill, because unlike any other book I've ever done, every opening was different. So you saw something of the play of the images and the text, and the color. All of those elements had to be synthesized, and they were in their heads, and it was in their drawings. But then I had the privilege of trying to get that balance of the tension between the tension between them, the drama in them. Keep all those elements consistent and moving forward, and that was my adventure through this whole process, and it's been very exciting for me to do. So the first thing I would get would be, as you saw one of these others, a drawing, a sketch. So we got the whole book sketched out before we even began, and that's a luxury. Normally we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants, but with this I could actually know what it was supposed to look like in rough form. So I would get this from Simon. This is one of the things he also did, which was a challenge, was to have engravings that were running across two pages. Now that was not such a bad thing if it happened to be a page where it was an opening, but if there was separate ones, then trying to marry them was difficult and not always successful, but we kind of said to ourselves, well, it still looks pretty good, so we won't worry too much about it. This one, well, I'm going to show you the actual block towards the end. So I would get this, and then Simon, as he actually engraved the blocks, would send another version of the opening with a paste up of the actual blocks, plus a proof of the blocks and instructions on make ready and underlay and what he would like here and how to do this. So I had lots of stuff to work with, and then I had to go ahead and put it in the press and try. This is the very first block that I got. This is the head of Pericles. And now what you're looking at is an arrangement of make ready. Maybe not everybody knows what make ready is all about, but it's how you get a piece of wood, which is not as even and consistent as anything out of metal, to create, to behave properly, so you can get the blacks and the lights nicely balanced. This particular block, that one at the very top, you see most of the head is disappearing. So that's the process of putting layers of paper under the block to raise it up so you can begin to get an image. And I believe that what you're seeing there is what was the underlay. And then I will do overlay on the cylinder of the press. I printed this on a Vandercook, which is, as most of you know, a lovely press and easy to work with, but not so easy with make ready. Anyway, I was meant to bring this make ready layout for you. I'll have to bring it tomorrow because I forgot. It'll be at our table if anybody was interested in the technical parts of it. This is just gives you a sense of the final version, the successive proofs that have led to the final version, which looks like that. The other interesting thing about this head is that there were two versions of it. This is the one we ended up using, but the one on the left is the first one we got. We actually printed our first prospectus in 2005, as we were being very optimistic about when it was going to be completed. And I hope you can see the difference there. The one on the left is a little bit like he's got stuff in his cheeks, a little puffed out, and he didn't like that too much, and redid it and sent me another block. But the sad story with that is I got the block, was locking it in the press, the coin key slipped out of my hand and hit the block. So I had to call Simon and say, I'm sorry, there's a little chip out of this block. And so he's the most gentlemanly, he never got the least bit flustered about anything to do with anything I'd done wrong. And he said, I will send it back and I'll try and see if I can plug it. And he did, he plugged it, and then there was a little bit of tweaking we had to do with the make ready at the time. There you see that whole sense of the dynamic rhythm. This is an early page, but that's where that head fit in the entire rhythm of that opening. There are four different styles of engraving, I guess. I mean, there's variations within those styles, but four groupings of engravings. There isn't just one consistent way that he wanted to present the images in the play. So this, on that page, you see the portrait style, the style we call the niche style, and I'll talk more about that, and the other, the more a little bit combination of some of them. But he wanted to carry the head of Pericles through the entire play. He is the absolute center. He's virtually in every scene. The play is about him. And the journey that he goes through, the pain, the tragedy, the joys, the triumphs, the aging, all of that is etched in his face. So if you just go through and follow these portraits, you get a sense of what's happening to this young man. First portrait, it's basically a face without much written on it. He hasn't done much yet, and maybe it's just a little bit young and arrogant, and he has to lose some of that. So here, there's not much time has gone by to this next head. The head on the right is Thaisa, the woman whom he marries, and there's that the way that the composition is to have that balance and tension between them at the same time. But you do see him changing as we go on. There's very much a change where a great deal has happened on his voyage and a great deal of pain. He's been shipwrecked for one thing. 14 years go by in the play. The block on the left is just a very calm shot of the sea, which we saw basically as an intermission block, which would just say, okay, let's take a breath. We've reached all this drama that's occurred. The shipwreck has occurred. Thaisa has supposedly died in childbirth and been thrown overseas in a coffin. And Pericles has left his daughter Marina in Tarsus with a king and a queen to look after her while he wanders about further in his adventures. And the block you see on the right is Pericles 14 years later. The little image down at the bottom is a shot of, or an image of Marina having a conversation with the princess of Tarsus. Okay, the story moves along. More disaster happens, and I'm not sure how well you can see those images. They're very black. So please believe that I haven't printed them that darkly, and they actually are possible to see the lights and the darks. But you can't get a sense of the rhythm of the action that's going on and the drama that is occurring. The one on the top right where this figure is gesturing, running away, is you heard that Marina was kidnapped by pirates and taken to a brothel. The story that Pericles was told was that she had died. So as far as he's concerned, he's lost his wife, he's lost his child, and he's running off in anguish. And the full face indicates that sense of anguish. I think this is a block that I've got something that... Yes. In the instructions or suggestions or kind remarks that Simon would send with the engravings as they appeared, he would give me a proof, which would give me a very good idea of what to aim for, which is sometimes extremely intimidating. But he would also would give me verbal instructions as well on how I might possibly, what I would be ideally aiming for. So with this block, what he wanted, generally speaking, it was get all the blacks black and keep all the lights really light and silvery, you know. So in various ways he would say that. But this one he said, get the black knight black, but print the lit side of the face, hair and beard as light as you can. We are seeing him in a flash of lightning. Well, as I say, you probably can't quite see whether I've achieved that or not, but that's what I was attempting to achieve. Then it moves on to, there's a shot of moving further on. That's the woman on the left is not Thaisa anymore. This is Marina grown up. But as you see, Simon has managed to capture the resemblance without making them exactly the same. And Pericles has gone into a fit of grief. He won't speak. He hardly eats, just enough to keep alive, because he just feels that he deserves to suffer. Fate has dealt him such harsh blows that he's just barely surviving them. I think he feels it's his responsibility to go on surviving them and feeling the pain and almost, you know, generating even more in himself. Okay, so that's the journey of the portraits, which carry this character all the way through and keep him front and center. Another style were what we call the niche engravings, and on this particular opening, which is virtually the opening of the play, you have two different styles. On the left, what I would describe as much more naturalistic and very detailed, and you know, he's getting the dimensions of the actions of that. On the right, the images are contained within these curved niches, and the idea was that these would imitate stone carvings. That, you know, you might imagine that these were statue figures within a stone niche, and these ones are always telling the story of the relationships amongst the characters. And in the third one below, this is a very dramatic one, which is echoing the more naturalistic one. There's an incestuous relationship between the king, Antiochus, and his daughter. So we've seen that already. I've shown where you have the niches combining with the portrait, combining with the sort of more naturalistic moving ones. So then the other challenge, as I said, sometimes he had these blocks going across pages, and this is not one where they're married completely. So he tried, he said, a little bit of a gap is okay, but nothing too much. And so you see that in the connection between Pericles holding his hand out and the incestuous relationship going on, which is one of the reasons why Pericles has to flee, is because he figures out the riddle, which is... He goes to woo or court the daughter, and he has to answer this riddle in order to win her. He answers the riddle successfully. All those other fellows who were on the stakes were unsuccessful. So either you win the daughter or you lose your head. But he realized that the answer to the riddle was that the king was having an incestuous relationship with his daughter, and there was no way he could win. So he decided that he has to get out of there. Now here we have more niche ones where the relationships are between the characters in the brothel, the bawd and Marina, the pander and the governor of Mytilene, who comes to have his way with this beautiful new girl he's heard all about. Marina manages to persuade him that he should be virtuous and never see deal with a whore again, and he falls in love with her, of course. And this is the closing niche where everybody is reunited, and there's that sense of the harmony of the relationships. And this is the very final. Oh, sorry, this is the final one. This is the one where Pericles comes to Pentapolis, and there's a different, completely different father-daughter situation going on here. Obviously, a very healthy, positive one. And he falls in love, and she with him. And this niche, we're reminded of those niches with those arches at the back, but the figures themselves are much more full and rounded and three-dimensional. So he wants us to see, I think, the harmony that's created at this moment in this relationship, because this is the one that's going to go someplace and be positive. Then, so we have the portraits, the niches, then dumb shows. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with the dumb show style. It appears in Shakespeare, it appears in medieval plays, and virtually all the way back to Greek drama, where there is a silent tableau, or and it can be a moving one, where it's essentially a narrative. The story of the scene which has just occurred or is about to occur, either way, it can be a summation or a prediction of what's going to happen, is mimed, acted out in dumb show form, in a very ritualistic way. And it's an echo of or an anticipation of action that's going to happen. So it's really related to storytelling. Another of the dumb shows where Pericles is bowing and being given the hand of Thaisa, I believe that's where it is. Just above is Hymen, who is the little goddess, god of marriage. Can't see it too well, though. Okay, I can see it just fine here. And then the rings in the gutter just indicate that. So he's always had the eye to how to make the flow of the, not only the storytelling, but the emotional tenor of the whole play and how it was moving forward. So the dumb shows continue, and then the block underneath is a very dynamic, moving with the storm. There are a number of storms that occur, ships breaking up, and he captures the drama of those moments fantastically. Okay, then, as I say, there's also a naturalistic style, what you would expect to see in engravings of someone of Simon's experience and expertise, is that you would see images that look very lifelike. And so there are a number of those. And every once in a while, he'll open out and spread those out into whole page illustrations. This is very rare in the book because we didn't want to have that sense, that static sense of image, text, block, block. You know, we wanted the flow. But every once in a while, it's as if you wanted to have just this explosion of the image in a very dramatic moment. And so this is where Neptune is blowing the winds and Pericles is heading off on another journey. Another full page one, a very big moment. After the brothel scenes where Marina has basically been given the right to remain a virgin so long as she sings, plays music, and creates tapestries to entertain people. Coincidentally, as it happens in all these stories, Pericles ends up coming to Mytilene as well, in his ship, but he remains in the ship. He doesn't get out of bed. He won't cut his hair. He's in utter desolation, and the governor says to one of the commanders of the ship, "Well, I know this girl who is absolutely enthralling. Maybe she can do something. Maybe she can come and sing to him, and something will happen." So there is this moment, which is one of the most powerful and moving in all of Shakespeare. This reconciliation scene where Marina and Pericles meet each other, unbeknownst to each other, for the first time, and have a conversation. She sings. Something about her voice captures his attention, makes him kind of listen and look at the first time, speak for the first time. And they have this conversation, where they realize sort of one moment from the other that they are father and daughter, and it's one of the most chilling moments in, thrilling and chilling moments in all of Shakespeare in any play. This one is after the reconciliation has occurred. Pericles is lying on asleep. He's kind of collapsed. He's just overwhelmed with emotion. And this is the scene where the goddess Diana, who has been also all the way through the play as a protector of both Marina and Thaisa, and she comes there, and he has a vision that he, and is told he must go back to Ephesus to pay obeisance to the goddess at the temple. And of course, who is in Ephesus but his long lost wife Thaisa? So there's going to be not one reconciliation scene but two. I mean, almost more than the emotion can bear. So when Simon, again, this was another one of the blocks where Simon said, okay, well, I want you to get those blacks, and there has to be very ethereal and be silvery, and the grays have to disappear at the top there, and I don't know whether it's a very good block, and do your best. And it actually turned out, I think, extremely well, thanks to him. Okay, so this is the coming back to that first drawing of the sketch of the tournament where Pericles comes to joust for the hand of Thaisa. This has six different blocks in it, and again was not on the same opening, so I try to marry it as best as possible and keep all the images together. But he's done a phenomenal job of making that scene come to life in a very dramatic and powerful and compelling way. So I didn't quote from Simon as much as I intended to, because it's somehow I probably am running out of time. But my favorite instruction from him was, hang on, I want to quote it exactly. Right, he's talking about the reconciliation scene, which was the one we all struggled over. How do you make that moment when Pericles and Marina see each other and go, how do you do that in a page? It's hard enough on the stage. And we all finally came up with an idea, and so we got this engraving. And he says, in reference to my printing of the image of Pericles in this, all the engraving should show in his eye. Print it tenderly. So by then, I think I knew what he meant by that. And I'd like to give him the final word too, because this is something he said very early on when we were all planning this. He said, I think there should be scope for going to the heart of the play. Whatever between us we come to think it may be. So I wish to thank my darling Crispin, Simon, who's not here, for the most wonderful dance I've ever had. Thank you.